Hi, I'm David Schreiner Kahn, and this is Smashing the Plateau. No matter how successful you are, there's probably at least one area where roadblocks are keeping you from fully achieving your goals. Fortunately, you've come to the right place. Every expert I interview on this podcast is different, but they all have one thing in common. They know how to fix problems that keep people stuck. Today's interview is with Gary Ireland. Gary is the principal of the law offices of Gary Ireland. His specialty is working with executives in transition. He has worked closely with many top business leaders, including Jim Burke, the former CEO of Johnson & Johnson and former CEO of Partnering for Drug-Free America. Gary is also the winner of the NAACP's Foot Soldier in the Sands Award for its 100th anniversary. Gary, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, David. It's a pleasure to be here.
Gary, tell us what you do and how you got started doing it.
Thank you, David. I work with executives who are transitioning both in and out of companies, and sometimes they'll be the subject of a discrimination action where they might bring a suit against the company. But oftentimes, I work with executives who want to leave their companies, and it's an amicable separation, and I help make that smooth for them so they can move on to their next business opportunity.
Great. What would you say are one or two of the traits that your clients have in common?
Well, the successful clients are generally people that are motivated, and they have a personal mission, and that's what I find with most successful people. They transcend their own business and are able to be successful in many areas. And what I mean by that is you take someone like Jim Burke, who was a real pioneer, and his business practices are studied in business schools, particularly for his handling of the Tylenol tragedy, where he took the product off the shelves. He was equally as successful in a partnership for Drug-Free America, where he was, I believe, asked to be the drug czar under President Reagan, and he stayed with the Partnership for Drug-Free America and saved countless lives. So I see people that are successful in one area are frequently successful in many areas, and they're driven by a passion far beyond monetary gain.
That's really fascinating, because the two organizations, Johnson & Johnson and Partnering for Drug...
The Partnership for Drug-Free America?
Right, the Partnership for Drug-Free America. The two organizations are very different kinds of organizations, yet you're describing a leader who was successful in both.
Many of the most successful people that I work with are guided by moral principles that transcend their businesses. And what I mean by that is they'll work both within, sometimes within religious organizations or some sort of nonprofit organization, and they'll be just as driven in that business as they are in their profession.
That's really interesting. And would you say that the passion and the way that leaders you work with are driven is a guiding force in your own life and has impacted the kind of work you do both professionally and outside of your legal practice?
I would say absolutely. I take my nonprofit work very seriously, and I think my goal and what I teach my children is to try to make a difference in the world. I currently sit on the board of a homeless outreach program, the ONHUS Homeless Outreach and Advocacy Program, and I also sit now on the Alexander Robertson School, and I take both of those programs very seriously, and I want to make a difference in every program that I work with, and as particularly when I work with the most needy New Yorkers at the ONHUS Homeless Outreach Program and with children at Alexander Robertson.
So passion is a driving force in your life, quite clearly.
Absolutely. I think it is, and everyone I know that's successful has a passion for life that goes well beyond their work life.
Okay. So even though passion can be a great motivator and a great driver for all of us, what happens when we get stuck? Because every professional, no matter how successful, finds himself or herself stuck at one point or another. There could be a slowdown in growth of the organization that one's involved in. It could be a personal slowdown. It could be changes that are external in the marketplace. Sometimes there are management challenges that happen when a company does manage to grow. What tips can you share on navigating those plateaus, whether from your own experience or observing some of the successful people you've worked with?
That's a really good question, and there's a lot of parts to it. One of the most important things is I always encourage my clients and everyone I know to, and I do it myself, is to invest in yourself. And by that I mean always try to improve yourself, whether it be taking a course that can be unrelated to your business interests or related, but always try to improve yourself every day. It can be as simple as reading a book, going to a seminar, but always try to improve yourself no matter how busy you are. And that goes to, it helps you from being flat-footed when you're caught in a bad situation. Everyone's going to encounter controversy, and that's without a doubt. It's how you react to that controversy that's going to distinguish your being successful or not. And by having a continuing educational program to improve yourself on a daily basis, that's going to give you the tools. The other thing that I always encourage my clients to do is reach out beyond yourself. Help somebody who's going to need help. And also by doing that, you're going to learn other cultures and other different avenues that you might want to pursue. So it's going to keep your business interests interesting to you. And what I mean by that is what's interesting to you now might not be what's interesting to you 10 years from now. We're all evolving, and we want to keep our business interests fresh.
Interesting. What are some of the educational components that have helped you along the way, particularly when you have felt like you're getting stuck in a particular area?
I've had, over the years, I've had different business coaches that I've worked with that I think have been tremendously uplifting. And I also seek religious guidance. I seek guidance from mentors. I always try to have a mentor, someone that I respect and admire both professionally and personally. I don't think you can distinguish, the phrase I guess from the 90s would be compartmentalize. And I don't think you can compartmentalize from your business to your personal life. I think that they transcend each other and interact with each other. So I try to find people that have an uplifting personal and professional life.
That's really fascinating. In areas where your business and your personal life intersect around these issues of passion and values, how do you draw a boundary so that there's a healthy balance between work life and personal life?
That's a good question. And a few years back, I represented a gentleman who had been pulled over by, and he was a African American gentleman who had been pulled over and severely beaten by a police officer. And when he filed a complaint, and his wife filed a complaint, the police came back to his house and pulled him out and beat him again in front of the African American neighborhood. That was a tremendously consuming case, but it was also a passion of mine to make sure that we got justice, which we ended up prevailing in federal court and getting punitive damages. It was important for me at that time in my life to make sure that I sought guidance from mentors, and because we were under a lot of pressure and I had received some threats as a result of that case, and it made my family nervous. I had sought guidance from people that had similar cases in the past and had similar experiences and similar pressures, and that it handled it, I thought it handled it well. So I think it's very important to, if you see somebody that you want to emulate, reach out to that person. Oftentimes they'll be flattered and be willing to help you and provide guidance.
Yeah, and you know, I think that's so true. People generally like being asked to help, and in cases where they generally can, they are, I've found that they're generally quite willing to do so.
Right. It's not like you're asking them for business. What you're asking them for is for a little bit of time and to understand what makes them successful. And people, you know, they like to talk about themselves, but they also want to help other people be successful, especially if it's similar success. Because, you know, if I see someone that I think is an important role model, I want to talk to that person.
Gary, have you had situations where people have reached out to you for your guidance and your advice and your help in a mentoring role?
Sure. I try to help out young attorneys all the time. And I also work with the Boy Scouts and my daughter's in the Canadian Scouts. So I work all the time with young people and try to be a role model by my actions, but also if there's something, you know, if they have a problem or want to speak to me, I try to make sure that I'm available to speak to anybody. I think giving back to the community is a great way to be out there and also make sure that you know, the next generation is going to be principled.
Do you have any particular advice for leaders of organizations or businesses where they seem to be working really hard, they've done reasonably well, but they've kind of hit a plateau, and they can't seem to get beyond that. So they're trying to work harder and harder and harder, getting more and more stressed out, and not sure where to turn for help.
I've had that in my own business, and what I've done is I've tried to implement systems, and this is a few years back, I think, when there was a downturn in the economy, but before 2008, I was wondering what was going on with my business, and what I did was I brought in somebody I respected and asked them what systems they had implemented in their own business to be successful, because I think the less you have to reinvent the wheel, the better. If somebody has a system that seems to work for them, ask them what it is. And by implementing systems, and I'm constantly reviewing them and seeing if there's some better policy or system that I can implement, then the business becomes better and it runs itself. And then I can have, the more I have systems in place, the more I can have other people run those aspects of my business.
Gary, what are some of the systems that you've found that work really well?
That's a good question. Well, let's take the most simple ones. I have forms, for everything from form letters to forms that I use in court, and they're all easily accessible on my computer. So if someone else needs to get in there, they can come in, and my business can be run very easily by someone else. And that frees up my day to look for other business opportunities.
That's great. What have been some of the good sources of business opportunities?
Well, I try to reach out to other people that have similar interests. For example, I'll try to have lunch. You know, Fridays tend to be a little bit slower with most business people. So I'll try to reach out to people on Fridays and see if they have time for breakfast or lunch. I generally do breakfast. I don't do things after work much, but I'll have breakfast or lunch with somebody and reach out to them. And oftentimes, nothing to do with business. I'll speak to them about other issues, and that to me has led to more business than probably anything else. Talking to people about common interests, if we might be working on a homeless outreach program or some sort of sticky political problem that we're trying to do. I worked closely with a bunch of homeowners, several homeowners along the south shore of Long Island trying to protect the public beaches. So I would meet with them regularly, and we'd talk about issues other than the problem that we were all dealing with.
You know, Gary, that's really interesting because people do business with people they know, like, and trust. So if you get to know people around common interests, that helps develop trust and helps people find a common bond.
Absolutely. And I also find that you'll run into people that are willing to help. And I'll give you an example, right, you know, of a recent one. My son was doing his Scout Eagle project for the Yonhus Presbyterian Church over and working at their homeless outreach program, where we volunteered for almost 20 years, since before he was born. And the floor was in terrible shape. It's 3,500 square feet. It was built in 1880, and it's destroyed. So we were looking for a partner, and my son reached out to the Home Depot. And they have Team Depot, which helps veterans, and we serve a lot of veterans over there. And unfortunately, a lot of them are having problems, and we need to take better care of those that have served our country. But the Team Depot came in, they volunteered their work, they didn't get comp time or anything, and they were tremendous. They are highly skilled and committed. It was a calling as much as it was work. These people were so eager to help. They also donated goods from Home Depot, and we had we had fun doing the project. That was just last weekend. So you know, I find when you reach out to people and you find the right people to work with, it almost always works if you're willing to work hard enough.
Getting the right people involved in any particular project, whether it's for business or for something volunteer, getting the right people is really important.
Absolutely. And it also frees you, as to go back to my earlier comment, it frees up the entrepreneur to move on to other projects. When I have systems put in place because I've brought in experts that have said this is a good idea to use these systems, then it frees me up to work on other projects and other entrepreneurial aspects of my business, and also to pursue legal aspects of my business. So I found that putting logical systems in place and looking at the business as a whole and building the business as opposed to just working for the business makes all the difference in success.
Finding balance is very important, which leads me to another question, which is, how do you balance the long-term, in-depth work that the best attorneys do with the calls and emails and, in particular, the so-called, quote-unquote, emergencies that clients have, that all attorneys have to deal with?
That's an important part of any business is trying to figure out to prioritize, essentially, I think is what you're saying, and what is urgent and what makes sense, what is really urgent and what is perceived as urgent. And obviously, I want to call my clients back if they are trying to get in touch with me. I try to get back to them as soon as possible, within a few hours, hopefully. If it's truly an urgent problem, I'll address it immediately. But it's important for me to look to long-term goals of the business and also of my clients, and I have to address those every day. So you have to schedule time. I get up very early. Like today, I was at work at 6 o'clock. That's not necessarily, I don't always get here that early, but I have opportunities that I feel I can pursue early in the morning before people are going to call me. And then when the calls start coming in, I've gotten some of the work done that I need to get done, because in the evening I like to be home and do things with my family. But I find that if I get in early enough, I can get a lot of work done before I have to address, kind of put out fires.
Right. So that also means that by getting in very early before most people are at work, you have time that is blocked when people are very unlikely to try to reach you with an emergency.
Absolutely. And if people need to reach me, they generally know that I'm in that early so they can give me a call.
Okay.
So it's usually a legitimate problem.
That makes sense.
And most of my clients, truthfully, have my cell phone number. I don't mind giving that out because they've been traditionally respectful of my time. And if there's truly an emergency, I want them to call me.
That's good. Gary, are you working on anything now that you're really excited about that you'd like to share?
I've got a client that I've been working with for a number of years, Maxis Systems International, a guy named Paul Marshall, who I'd known since college. We went to Columbia together. And Paul was one of the innovators in virtual reality. And now he's still working on the software of virtual reality, but he's also working on a really interesting drone project where he's developing drones for non-traditional uses. So far, drones have been practical we mostly hear about them in warfare, but there's a lot of domestic and business applications, from going through warehouses to using them for herding cattle, for weather reports, for traffic reports, and he's developing software for the various drones. And I'm doing some of the legal work with Paul. So, and I think there's a lot of opportunities in the technology sector, and I'm really enjoying working with the entrepreneurs. Paul's been on his own for a long time, but I'm working with a lot of people that have left oftentimes the financial services industry and started their own businesses, and I'll act as counsel to them and in various capacities. I'm also working on an exciting project with an educational corporation that is developing some software and has some interesting projects on data mining to help expedite some of the educational trends and to help the students. So I find that very interesting, and it helps our communities to have better programs and systems in place to help our kids.
Do you see a lot of crossover between financial services and technology?
Absolutely. Financial services, many of the people that I've worked with have started their own companies, and they're innovative, they are creative, and they're partnering with a lot of other organizations who may have expertise in certain areas. For example, the educational area is exploding. There are so many creative ways for helping students, both one-on-one and by accessing data. So I find that there's going to be, I think it's an area that's moving very fast, and it's going to move even faster as data is collected. Obviously, they have to be careful about privacy issues also, but just using the raw data is very helpful in getting our students the necessary tools that they need to be successful.
What do you think some of these technical tools might mean in terms of impact on brick and mortar educational institutions that have been around for decades or centuries?
Well, I think the sense of community is always going to be needed for schools, but we're already seeing, certainly at the college level, almost all of the successful schools are having less brick and mortar emphasis and more emphasis on computer and other technology. So that you're going to have a de-emphasis on brick and mortar, but I think in the end of the day, particularly for young kids, you've got to have a sense of community for the students to thrive.
Interesting. So do you think that there's a way to have a sense of community if the only way that students are accessing new information is virtually?
Sure. I think if they can come together virtually, that works as well. I think whatever people are comfortable with and creates a sense of camaraderie and they're willing to share ideas. Many of my clients, and I'm sure you're the same way, many of my clients I don't meet face to face. I meet them, you know, by telephone, or I'll just work with them over the computer. So whatever creates a sense of community, and this is it's an ever evolving sense of community. It's not certainly not the same as when we grew up.
Oh, that's for sure. I mean, technology has changed things drastically, and you're right. I've observed with my clients and colleagues that community is shaped in many different ways and using many different tools. I also see that different individuals, whether they're clients or others, communicate effectively using different tools, and it's important to understand what tools work best for which people. And I see that people learn in different ways, which is part of the reason why we offer our information to the public using different methodologies. So we have we've been doing interviews in a written format for the last few months. We're now doing these audio podcasts. We do in-person workshops, and different people access the information differently, and the different methodologies resonate differently depending upon who's in the room.
Absolutely, but the there's, you do need the face-to-face connection, and that's why I try to make appointments with people. I think as much as we're comfortable working, you know, over the phone or by email or by text, I think you do need the face-to-face connection, and that really resonates with me. I run a scout troop, and actually we're going to be going out camping tomorrow night, and there's no greater sense of community than when you've got a problem solved, when you show up and, you know, invariably something is forgotten, the weather changes, something is unpredictable, you're in an environment, and you collectively have to problem solve, and you're right there face-to-face. That really creates It's a sense of community for me anyway.
Yeah, I don't think anything can totally replace face-to-face, even though we do have lots of tools and people
Absolutely.
Access information in lots of different ways. There's nothing quite like face-to-face. And for certain kinds of conversations, it's one of the things we encourage people to do is think about what message you need to transmit and then decide which method of communication is most appropriate.
Absolutely. And I think people are using their time more wisely. So they do meet face-to-face, but they don't have to meet face-to-face all the time.
That's so true. That's so true. Well, Gary, it sounds like you have quite a range of experiences. You're working on some very different, very interesting projects, both professionally and outside of your office. Unfortunately, we're coming close to the end of our interview. And you know, we believe that one of the most vital elements to smash through any plateau in business or life is to create a community, as we've been discussing. Create a community of complementary people with complementary talents. That's why we always end our interviews with this question. Who do you know who is outside your own organization that is currently doing work you're especially excited about, and why?
That's a really good question, and I have to say it's with this organization that I knew very little about up until just a few months ago, and it's the Home Depot. They did tremendous work. You know, the Team Depot with the philanthropy that they're giving to our community, our veterans specifically, in trying to create homes and create a more comfortable, in our case, a homeless outreach program for our veterans. I can't speak highly enough of the organization and their hiring practices, because the people that I encountered over there were so passionate. It was as I think I said before, it was more of a calling. These people showed up, they worked tirelessly, and they were so unselfish. And all they wanted to do, they actually followed up with me. I got an email just today from one of them asking if I knew of any other projects that perhaps homeless veterans or veterans that had been displaced that might need work on a home. So, it's so uplifting spiritually to find an organization like Team Depot that will reach out unconditionally and particularly help those that have helped our country, our servicemen. So that has to be. I was highly impressed by what I saw last week.
Wow, that's really great, Gary. Thank you for mentioning that. Gary, thank you for being on our show.
Today's, thank you for having me, David.
Today's interview with Gary Ireland, principal of the law offices of Gary Ireland. You've been listening to Smashing the Plateau, the podcast produced by 10 Strategic Partners. Be sure to visit our website at smashingtheplateau.com and join our email list to hear many more great interviews like this one. And if you like what you heard, please leave us a review on iTunes by going to smashingtheplateau.com/iTunes. I'm your host, David Schreiner-Kahn, and we'll be talking again soon.